Hello, and welcome to this podcast, just one of a series on the early 19th century German writer Heinrich von Kleist. My name is Sean Allen, and I'm from the University of Warwick. And in this episode, I'll be talking to Professor Ricarda Schmidt from the University of Exeter about Kleist's relationship with three women in particular: his half-sister Ulrike von Kleist, his fiancée Wilhelmina von Zenger, and his cousin Marie von Kleist. I wanted to start off by talking about Kleist's half-sister, Ulrike von Kleist. Ulrike was born in 1774, and she was just a little older than her half-brother Heinrich. She was 3 years older than him, but of course she outlived him by nearly 40 years. In the later part of her life, she became a teacher, and of course she remained unmarried. But it's very striking, I think, that Kleist had a particularly close relationship with her. He called her, in fact, the only one who truly understands me, in a letter of May 1799. And I was wondering, Ricarda, whether you could tell us a little bit about what kind of a woman she was.
She was a very energetic woman, very enterprising woman. She would travel with Kleist repeatedly. She was the one who went with him to Paris in men's clothing, very enterprising at that time. It was done primarily for financial reasons, because that meant they didn't need to have a maidservant for her. They could just travel by themselves, so that was cheaper. Kleist wasn't altogether so keen for her to travel with him, but she did anyway. She also travelled by herself to Bern when Kleist was in Switzerland, and she got news that he was ill. By the time she got there, he was well again, and she'd done that huge big journey all in vain. But nevertheless, she was then the one who acted decisively when Kleist's friend Wieland got into difficulty and was expelled from Switzerland. So within 2 hours, she organised the whole departure, and they took Wieland out of Switzerland. So, very, very decisive, energetic, and Kleist sometimes seemed to find that a bit much, and he reproached her for not being feminine enough. He wrote this poem, I think it was for her birthday, saying that she was between genders and she should choose one. And, you know, he didn't like her not following gender norms at the time.
That's right. He wrote, I think, a letter to Adolfina von Werdeck, his friend, on 28th of July 1800. He said, "What a blunder on nature's part to have constructed a being neither male nor female, but wavering between the two like an amphibian." And I was wondering, you talked about gender norms. Kleist clearly, or at least seems to hint at the idea that he doesn't really approve of this breaking of gender norms. Do you see Ulrike as a woman who was at odds with the gender norms of her time? This travelling in men's clothing, this going on her own to Bern, they seem to me to point to a rather different kind of woman than perhaps Kleist's fiancée, Wilhelmina von Zenger, we'll come on to in a moment.
Yeah, we don't know, because her letters, very few of her letters have been kept, to what extent, you know, this was a conscious decision to go against gender norms of the time. But she certainly had a very rational mind. Kleist once reproached her for thinking and dancing correctly to the metronome. So he thought women ought to live for men alone, and Ulrike never marrying. That was another thing Kleist reproached her very much for. We don't know what Ulrike replied to all these reproaches, that nature had intended her to be a mother and she shouldn't refuse that. Kleist himself, of course, has also been regarded as not fulfilling gender norms. Well, he didn't fulfill gender norms in the sense that he didn't bring honour and recognition to his family, which he craved by his work. And time and again, he needed Ulrike to help him financially. He wasn't in possession of his fortune until he came of age, which at the time was rather late, at 24 years old. So until then, Ulrike time and again helped him out financially. I don't know why she had so much more money, but she did, and did help him. They also set up a house repeatedly, in Paris and then in Königsberg again. And Ulrike was also the one who campaigned to get him out of France when he was arrested as a suspected spy and was taken to a rather forbidding fortress. And she went to Berlin to the French commander and really demanded he be set free. So, and she achieved it. So somebody who was very decisive, very active, time and again helping him. Nevertheless, Kleist, shortly before his death, wrote to Marie von Kleist, reproaching Ulrike for not having known the art of loving and completely sacrificing herself for the loved one. And he did retract that in his final letter to Ulrike. That was a letter of reconciliation in which he explicitly said he retracted that particular remark because he knew she would hear of it and that she'd done everything for him, that human being could.
You've characterised her very nicely, I think, as a very enterprising woman, but quite extraordinary in certain ways. And sometimes I feel there's a huge contrast between her and the woman who was, for a period, Kleist's fiancée, Wilhelmina von Zenger, a woman 3 years younger than Kleist, and a woman who came from a military family herself in Frankfurt an der Oder. Of course, we know that Wilhelmina never married Kleist, and I always think in the correspondence about her, there's a kind of sense of reticence that comes across. One of the letters that he writes, he describes, he says, Wilhelmina even has a sense for the finer things, something of a discernment for the nicer points. I'm grateful if she listens to me at times with interest, before adding, even if she has not much to say in return. One of the puzzles for me is the sort of energy that Ulrike von Kleist radiates in this rather demure figure of Wilhelmina von Zenger, or are we doing her an injustice?
I think she was demure, but that was how Kleist thought women ought to be. And one of the strains in the relationship with his sister was that Ulrike didn't conform to that norm. Plus, also, there's a difference in the relationship between brother and elder sister and a man and his fiancée. And Kleist very much fell into the mode of the time about the relationship between a young man and his fiancée or beloved. Just as Goethe said, there's nothing better for a relationship if a young man wants to teach and a young girl wants to be taught. That kind of thing happened with Kleist as well. One of the first things he did was, that was before he actually got engaged to her, to organise some private teaching for the women in the house of the Zengers and his own sister.
She was, in fact, his pupil, wasn't she?
Sort of, because he'd only just started at university and immediately wanted to pass it on. So he became sort of sub-teacher, and what he'd learned, he passed on to the girls and even arranged some classes for the girls, because in those days, girls, of course, could not go to university with one of the university teachers. And that way he got to know her a bit after his brother Leopold, who was much more lively, and Kleist was always, rather taciturn, not the ladies' entertainer, but they got to know each other then. And he posed to her in writing, typically, not orally in writing. She refused at first, but, you know, he persevered, and eventually she gave in. They became sort of unofficially engaged on condition that he would take an office which could keep his wife, future wife, to the standard of life she'd become accustomed to, which of course he never did. So him wanting to teach her, making her into an ideal wife, the mother of his children, was the big project he engaged in. And later, Wilhelmine said to her husband, Traugott, Wilhelm Traugott Krug, that he wanted to turn her into an ideal, and she was rather sad at that because she tried her best, but she felt she couldn't quite live up to Kleist's expectation of the ideal wife.
I think he even went as far once as to describe her, his project, as being like shaping the reed for the mouthpiece of his clarinet.
Yes, the shaping comes up in his letters very, very strongly. And that he wouldn't want somebody who was already perfect. He wants to shape somebody to his needs, just as he did the mouthpiece of a clarinet, rather than having it ready-made.
There is, of course, a third woman in Kleist's life, Marie von Kleist, a woman who was 16 years older than Kleist and who had married into the Kleist family. I think he first got to know her in 1795 when he was a young soldier in Potsdam, but it's really in the later part of his life that she starts to assume, I think, a more prominent role. And she strikes me as a very interesting figure, although we don't know a lot about her, but she's certainly someone to whom Kleist, I think, writes some of his most candid thoughts about literature and art and the role of women and in the reception of art and so on. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about this figure, Marie.
He trusted her a great deal. He sent her the drafts of his plays, in particular of Penthesilea, and he said that he could imagine that under different circumstances she could have done something like it, which is quite remarkable. And she very much appreciated what he was trying to do. It's obviously pretty scandalous to have a woman commit cannibalism on her beloved. So while on the other hand Kleist was saying that it's due to women that our stage has gone all downhill, because obviously they only wanted things like Ifrand and Kotzebue, nice, sweet, sugary models of noble behaviour. And Kleist wasn't going in for that. And he on the one hand, claimed it was women who were responsible for the decline of our state. But on the other hand, he sent it to Marie von Kleist and felt that she understood him and that he had enough confidence in her to send her drafts in which she'd crossed things out which weren't yet perfectly formed, and trusted her to intuitively understand what he was getting at, and she did.
But I think it's interesting, isn't it, that he does appeal to her to as someone who rejects the conventional female way of viewing drama.
Well, he obviously seemed to think her as not an ordinary woman, but somebody really very special. And she was special in that it's assumed that a pension that he allegedly got from Königin Luise was actually sent by Marie von Kleist from her private purse. So he didn't know, but once again he got financial support from a woman, rather than being the one who protected the woman and offered financial and other support to her. Marie von Kleist was actually getting divorced, but they used the term love between them, but nevertheless we don't know quite what to make of it, with this at the time quite considerable age difference between them. At the time of his death, she was 50, 34, and 50 in those days was old age.
Well, we've talked about three of the main women in Kleist's life, but I suppose no account of Kleist would be complete without mention of a fourth, Henriette Vogel, the woman with whom Kleist committed suicide on the 21st of November, 1811.
Ricardo, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about why this suicide was so scandalous and a little bit about Henrietta Fogel herself.
Suicide, of course, was a sin in the 19th century. So that was the first thing. But on top of all that, he had engaged in a suicide pact with a married woman, Henrietta Fogel. Henrietta Fogel was the wife of Friedrich Ludwig Fogel, a civil servant who was working in a kind of bank, and they specialised in giving loans to people working in the agricultural sphere. Now, Kleist had known her for some time because she was the godmother of his friend Adam Müller's daughter, the one for whom Kleist had written the Heilige Cecilia as a baptismal gift. They had agreed to commit suicide together because Henrietta Fogel was suffering from incurable cancer, and they had agreed for him to shoot her, and he actually shot her in the heart, and he shot himself in the head. They went out to this lake near Berlin, the Wannsee, went into a little inn and proceeded to write letters, farewell letters, to their various friends and relatives. They were surprisingly ecstatic farewell letters. Kleist was saying, how happy he was, what a fantastic, joyous death this was to be. He wrote to his friend and distant cousin, Marie von Kleist, that he was sorry he was unfaithful to her. They had a very close relationship on which there's quite some speculation. She was, however, 16 years his senior and his cousin, so what it was exactly, we don't know. But he wrote to her saying he wouldn't have left her for a woman who simply wanted to live with him. But Henrietta Fogel was prepared to die with him. So this ecstatic death that Kleist experienced and wrote to his friends and relatives about, was the added thing that made his suicide particularly controversial.
Well, I suppose given the extraordinary complexity and often contradictory nature of the relationships that Kleist had with the women he met, it's so tempting to speculate just how this filters through into his own creative writing. But that is, I think, a topic for another day. Thank you very much, Ricardo Schmidt.